When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, here we are. Nebraska, victorious, beats the Indiana Hoosiers 35-21. Nicholas Allen, Bob, Bo Robert, Rude in the hizzy. You were not at the game. You were solo dad all weekend. You were living the single dad life the whole weekend. I was expecting you look good. You look like you're doing okay right now.
My daughter slept really good. Like, we're talking 8:30 sleep in. So, I mean, it was the best first time like dad to himself weekend you could have ever dreamed of. So, I mean, I actually feel like refreshed.
Well, how did you do the game? How did you watch the game?
So I had to tape the game.
Okay.
And
put her to bed and then.
Yeah. Cause that's right in bedtime.
Like, yes.
You know, that's 6:30 to 7:30 is bedtime, tub time, all this. We did the whole thing taped. Now this game went long though.
This was the longest game in the world.
I had to tape, I think, three shows, like, three different shows after the game just to make sure I didn't miss it.
Right.
And thank goodness I did it, because like it was like the third quarter was halfway through and the game cast was done for the recording.
So when they really.
Yeah. You know how you like. You
yeah. Yeah. Right.
It was like 3.5 quarters was like the normal TV length.
I will say, do we need to start telling people like we need to a lot how it's almost rare that you record unless it's like Iowa, Wisconsin.
Yeah. It's like, we're done. And like, it's like,
down in 90 minutes, a lot of punts, a lot of run the clock. That's all.
They go off again. When Iowa, Wisconsin play, they go off. You're the old off air. Like, see you tomorrow. Like,
yes. It's just done. That's all it is. But every game now, it's rare that it's in its allotted thing that you record on your DVR. But this game was spectacularly long.
It was.
That had to have been brutal to be at the stadium for.
Oh, man. I mean, the amount of penalties. Like
23 combined penalties.
Yeah. I mean, the first half, you thought there's no way you could have that many penalties in one. And they almost did it again in the second half.
Right.
Like, golly.
Well, and we're going to get, I mean, I have six big broad topics I want to hit on, and they're all super like, we're going to talk about the offense, the defense. That's really what we are. Offense, defense, special teams, penalties is one of the things I want to get into. There can never have been a game in the history of football that had more intentional groundings.
The amount of times those refs threw their flag and were willing to be like the next play to be like, we'll throw it again.
Like, you know that you bet they were like, God dang it.
I mean, at some point though, like you got to just stop throwing the flag. You got to like let the game go.
Right.
You got to be like, look, each side gets to hold a little bit more.
I know. That's right.
Like, if it's so egregious,
right.
But maybe we can talk about this more when we get to the penalty section, but like,
you got some thoughts?
I got some thoughts.
Yeah, but the guy, Gus Fring, is what he looked like from Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad, was like the main official. That's what he looked like. Gustavo. No, I can't think of his voice now, but that's what he kind of looked like. That guy was like a superstar last night.
Yeah, he was.
He was all over the place. He was on the
screen a lot.
But we're going to get into penalties because there's a lot to discuss there. Overall, can I start with this with you? Any roadmap to salvaging the season, giving this season any hope, and giving Mickey any sort of legitimate shot at being the head coach next season had to involve winning Saturday against Indiana. Any way you slice it.
Yeah.
To happen.
Yeah.
So from that standpoint, Saturday's result was huge because all it did, it kept a lot of balls in the air.
Yeah.
Like, it kept hope, interest, Mickey's chances of being the head coach, all of those things would have just kerplatted if they wouldn't have won that game. So I get it. The season's been straight out of Nightmare on Elm Street, but last night had to happen to keep the season somewhat like I am exponentially more interested in the season today than I was a week ago.
I mean, a week ago at this time, we all were like glad there wasn't a game.
Bruh.
And collective interest was maybe in the Nebraska football history. In my lifetime, the lowest it's ever been.
Yeah.
But, you know, 1 week goes by, we win a game, and the rest of the Big Ten West
sucks
and collectively loses. Right. Like the teams that we expect to be good.
Right. Wisconsin's 0-2 and all that stuff. Like in the Big Ten.
Iowa, Minnesota all lose. And then you just, you know, we're going to be very careful to not get ahead of ourselves.
I know. It's hard.
Guilty.
Right.
Of misabuse of optimism.
Guilty on all charges. Anybody that listens to this, you and I are prone to Kool-Aid, prone to positive. But I mean, I think we can all just, all you can do is react to the moment. And when a new set of circumstances gets presented to us, I will arrive at a new conclusion. And now you want to be able to provide perspective and see through the muck. And listen, this team still has a ton of issues, but all I'm saying is the rest of the Big Ten West has a ton of issues. That game kept my interest level is just way higher. I'm not gonna lie. I want to watch Lance Leipold. I want to watch Dave Aranda. I want to watch Matt Campbell. I'm now like, let's get into what happens with this coach.
Yeah.
And now it's like, well, I mean, who knows?
I sent out a text. I thought it was like, am I crazy? Like, you know, before the game was played, I was like, Wisconsin gets bludgeoned.
Yes.
Minnesota gets beat at home.
To Purdue.
Iowa gets smacked. Oklahoma gets smacked. Martinez is playing out of his mind.
Just running wild.
Everything I thought I knew, I feel like I don't understand anything. And then Nebraska kind of does the same thing. They like play a winning game by, you know, winning in the fourth quarter and doing some of the things we're like they were incapable of doing. So I feel like right now I'm trying to like almost reassess, like the world is upside down. And for Nebraska, that's almost a good thing this week.
Yes.
That it's upside down for them.
I think one of the through lines through the past every year we've done the recap pods is we sit here and after a lot of the Frost games and the Frost era, we sit here and go, I don't understand what's going on. But even within that lack of understanding, what was understandable about it was the inexplicable nature of how they always find a way to beat themselves. Like that was the one thing you could always count on. Like I'm really lost right now with this team, this season. Ultimately you only got everything's a season's relative to the rest of the teams you're playing against. I look around and I just don't think Iowa's great. I don't think Wisconsin's great. I don't think Purdue is great. I don't think a lot of these teams are great. And I certainly don't think Nebraska's great. And just my opinion on where that team was at a week ago compared to now, it's changed a little bit. I mean, they performed much better than I anticipated them before. I'm not sure if we even picked on the wine pod. I did a prediction. I can't even remember
you
now. Too much.
Nebraska. I think it was like 34-31 or something.
Maybe I did. I mean, but I was halfway expecting Indiana to come win this game.
It's just hard. I didn't know really. I hadn't got to watch Indiana yet, and they were okay. They weren't great at all.
No.
I mean, they looked to me like they were a pretty average Big Ten team, but they beat Illinois, so they're good enough to beat the team to just beat Wisconsin. Like so. I'll take any, like, it's been so long since we've had a Big Ten win.
Right.
That to me, that was like a revelation. Like, you could feel the state and you could feel the team like that win they needed. They needed a Big Ten win in the worst way.
And I will say, and I know it's easy to always brag on them, but like, I thought the crowd looked like it was great. The stadium looked full. Like, it still is amazing to think about how little winning has ensued. And these fans keep on coming out, man. Like it's really impressive.
The fact that they were even there. I mean, yeah, maybe we as fans complain a little too much and we have too high a standards, but like the fact that they keep selling it out, Nick, it's kind of unbelievable.
It really is. So like I said, I got six big broad topics. We're going to get into the details of them, but I want to talk about the defense, the offense, the penalties, the special teams. I want to talk about Mickey Joseph. And some in the post game locker room and just Mickey in general. And then I have a big takeaway from this game. Again, we're going to get into the details, but let's get into it. That's kind of the menu.
We get to actually recap a game.
Yeah, I know.
I was thinking about it. I go, when was the last? We didn't do it this year almost.
I know. Everything's gone to the big picture stuff.
Northwestern, we I think we talked about the onside kick, for 30 minutes.
For like 45 minutes.
We kind of got into it, but really it's like the other three games were just like the wheels were coming off.
No question. Like,
let's not even talk about the game.
So real quick on Indiana, I think it is important to preface everything with, and this isn't to take away from Nebraska. Indiana was out there. They're a team that wants to throw it around the yard, play fast, and didn't have their top two receivers. That helps. Okay. But I know for me, at least, all eyes are going to be on the defense. First game, Bill Bush, defensive coordinator. I was really curious to see if there'd be some sort of noticeable, discernible difference. They had a bye week to work on some different things. They played some different guys a little bit more. Tell you what, Bo, and I really want to pick your brain on this. Outside of the two drives at the end of the first half for Indiana, it's hard to complain about what this, I mean, the defense, think about it. So the first half, let me just throw some numbers at you, okay?
Yeah.
First half for Indiana, their first six drives of the game, 26 plays, 74 total yards, zero offensive points. Then their last two drives, Nebraska got on their heels. I don't know if that tempo wore into them. They had a 7-play, 75-yard touchdown drive and a 6-play, 70-yard touchdown drive as well. Second half, 71 total yards for Indiana, 0 points. Missed tackles improved. According to Pro Football Focus, Nebraska had been averaging 13.75 missed tackles a game.
Wow.
Nebraska only had 6 missed tackles against Indiana, and 2 of them were on that one run where homeboy broke.
He went to hand one and said, I want the shoes and the long shorts.
Broke them off. But and the other thing was more disruptive. This game, 3 sacks most this season. 6 quarterback hurries most this season. 6 tackles for loss, tied for the most this season as well. And they were good on third down. Indiana was 2 of 15 on third down. I ask you, former Husker linebacker, former black shirt, former All Big 12 linebacker, what jumped out at you? Anything discernibly different?
Our defensive line was more physical. Like I looked at our defensive tackles, I thought they were more physical. Like they were getting push. They were defining their gaps better. Just a few of those like pass rushes, right? Where they're like moving into the quarterback. So even that makes a difference. And then the quarterback has a harder time making throws, right? So they did a lot of things I just think were more defined. Like it was simpler, right? Like looked like to me, it was like more, all right, we're going to run some man and then we're going to disguise man and just drop into a zone and throw the, like the quarterback was a little, like at times when we dropped these zones was very, you could tell like out of sorts,
right?
Like that's a sign of like, you're doing a good job calling the game. Like you're keeping them off balance versus like, it sort of felt like the last few weeks we were being picked apart, right?
Yes.
Like they knew what was coming. They were setting up where this was like, we were making them, all right, find the read and, you know, make the play versus like knowing where they were going with it. I think that's such a different, dynamic when you're playing, like you got to make them execute something hard,
right?
Versus like they're doing what they want to do.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. Okay. But I would say also too, like it's amazing just how big of a difference being more physical and tackling better makes. Like we can talk about all this other stuff. Like if you are just more physical, which I thought everybody just seemed had a little more thump to them.
Yeah.
And the tackles just looked, they were much better.
Yeah,
bringing guys down.
Isaac Gifford was like tighter in the box.
Yep.
This week, and he made a few tackles coming out of the game. I think set the tone as like, okay, all right, secondary guys tackle, right? So we still had a couple misses. I still am very curious about our safety's ability to tackle and to cover into angles. I think I see angles sometimes. I'm like, the angles. I'm very uncertain about the way they see the game and
right.
In the way they take angles. Like even, you know, I think Buford had one where like he gave up like a fade because he was just like.
Yeah. For the touchdown.
Yeah. But it wasn't even like a remotely.
That was a weird play
because his angles were so weird. His alignment and his angles, like things that you just should never happen.
Right.
And how they break and where they break, those type of things are still, I think they got a ways to go. But for the most part, yeah. Like, I thought like Buford was very physical in a couple tackles.
Yes.
And, Newsom was good. I like the new kid. So the new kid,
Hartzog,
he's like a, he was a, like a relatively like unknown out of Mississippi, but he was like, here's what I always liked about him. Like when we got him as a recruit, he was the guy that was like good at everything. He was just an awesome football player who's quote unquote too small or whatever.
Right.
That the big guys overlooked him, but then he became like, you know, the MVP of his league. And, you know, in the All-Star games, he was getting these, like, he's the dude that just is like good. And it's like, you know, they block a punt and it bounces to him and he like
scoops and scores it and
he
runs
doesn't
it.
Yeah. Miss it. Like right. He's the guy that will scoop and score.
Yes.
He sort of gives me a good vibe of like, he's a football player. Like mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about angles with him. I think he's like, I might be getting way too ahead of myself, but I get a good vibe from him.
It's just
already.
I totally agree. I thought Mickey had some good quotes on him after the game too. He said he's from, you know, just a guy from down south in Mississippi and the moment wasn't too big for him.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it's just amazing though. I'm not going to lie. I did not see, I don't want to make this out to be like that was, you know, hang it in, you know, it's going to be on ESPN Classic as one of the greatest defensive performances ever. It certainly was not that, yeah. But everything is relative to where you were at the start of the season. I did not think, based on what we had seen against Northwestern, North Dakota, Georgia Southern, and Oklahoma, that this defense had anything close to a performance that it showed on Saturday against Indiana. And so it's got to be a bunch of different things, I guess. You know, I mean, I'd have to imagine at some point tackling more in practice is going to reveal itself in the games. Bill Bush, I mean, he had to have made some sort of impact because you did not see
Nick. He made an impact.
Yeah,
he did. I mean, I didn't know what you can do in a week and a half, and they cleaned up some things. That, you know, that's a team that goes fast.
Right.
They simplified. They defined things. I mean, okay, can you play man coverage most of the time and drop, you know, these zones like all year long just like that? Like,
right.
Probably not. Like, they're going to have to keep like evolving this, right? Because you can't be too predictable. But like the guys are probably getting it, like line up right, you know, like know what you're doing, do it and do it fast, and like everything should be a little bit better just from that alone.
Yes.
Okay, now like these coaches are gonna have to do a good job, you know, scheming, getting these guys ready. That's a whole nother layer on top of it. But like the basic level of just lining up right, knowing what you're doing. Like, we were blowing things. Like, we were blowing too many assignments. I mean, it started with Northwestern. We gave, like, an uncontested touchdown.
I was just going to say, there was no – but I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm trying to remember, even the one long run was two missed tackles. Like, there weren't any major busts.
It didn't look like nobody was just running streak-free, right? Like, that is a sign of, like, we're lined up right. We're doing our jobs. Now, physically, do it better sometimes.
Right.
But that's what you'd rather have. They're, like, the Jimmies and the Joe, like – Jimmy's are beating Joe's sometimes, right? Or Joe's are beating Jimmy's.
Like,
right? So I just want to see that going forward and then improve. We can improve on develop, you know, Bush's own, what he wants to be calling. That's fine.
Yes. But
like, keep doing what we're doing there.
The other thing that this is, you know, water is wet type of comment, but it makes a difference, especially I think against a tempo team, is when you're good on third down defensively. Like, you didn't, it's something we'll get into, is this was the first game of the season where Nebraska, not just one, they had one time of possession against Oklahoma and Georgia Southern, but like a minute. They won time of possession plus 10 minutes. And the way you do that is you get off the fucking field on third down. Yep. So that tempo doesn't, like, they could never, Nebraska did a good job of not ever letting Indiana get it going.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I'm just looking at this right here. So our third down versus their third down, they were 2 of 15 and we were 7 of 16 on our, from our offense. So like 2 of 15 on third down. Now I'm just going back to the Rolodex of third down plays throughout this year. So far, it seems like every 3rd and 8, every 3rd and 10, they were at least half the time we're picking up those like
right.
ones that you should get off the field on. And they always like seemed like the drive was going good for our defense, and they let somebody get 11 yards when it's 3rd and 10, and then bad things started happening.
Right.
Right. So that's the thing that, like, if you get off the field and you really make them earn it with like amazing plays versus like, just stay, you know, keep this drive going. And like, more bad things happen, the more chances you give them. And it's just as simple as that. And we got them off the field
right
more of the time.
Yeah. And it's a cumulative effect, not only in the moment, but for the game too. Like, it gets them going. It takes away your confidence. And then you stay on the field longer. So you get worn down. I just thought the guys were fresher. They've had more pop to them. Some of that probably had to do with the bye. But also when you are on the field less,
I think our safeties and our linebackers looked so much better because they were fresher from the bye week, and they're fresher because they were off the field. I really think those two positions, the tackling throughout the year has gotten sloppy as yes. the game's gone on. And I think they just, like, a lot of those guys just didn't have their legs for under them in these games where they're doing like 80 or 90 snaps. And that's just it. So, like, to me, this needs to be part of our strategy is, like, we got to hold the ball for this defense.
Right.
Like, I just think that's the way we are what we are. And, like, not that everybody's not better when you're fresh, but, like, specifically us.
Yeah, that's what's hard.
Way worse.
That's what's hard right now. You could listen to this whole thing and be like, wow, guys, great, real insight. Good on third down makes a difference. But it's like, you got to unpack that even more, especially with team too. And you're just trying to figure out, okay, what was different? Well, one of the biggest things that was different was they finally got off the field on third down. They
got off a lot. I mean, like, 2 of 15. Yes. That's awesome.
So I still don't see a lot of dynamic dudes out there that are just, have just that different level of pop to them. But I just, when you think about the defense that was out there against Georgia Southern, or the defense out there against North Dakota, or obviously the defense out there against Oklahoma, and then what the defense was out there against Indiana, it is amazing the jump that they made. Yeah. So,
yeah, I mean, kudos to them. I still like this. So maybe the most impressive thing to me of all the things the defense did was they bounced back from having a really bad 5-minute stretch. Like, that 5-minute stretch, it looked like.
You're talking about the end of the first half.
Yeah, end of the first half. It was like, are we reverting to what we did?
It felt like that. You were like, uh-oh.
I thought we were, and then we came out and we got stops in the second half, and I went, okay. Well, okay, we're doing it. We made adjustments. We made adjustments.
Right.
And they were, you know, like,
yeah.
Nick, well, we haven't done it all year. Like,
honestly, what I think a part of that drive was too, was it at Matt Millen. I kind of like Millen. He made a good point on those last two drives where it started to get away from Nebraska, where he goes, this is what a tempo team will do to you. It was the only time of the game where it felt like that ball got rolling a little bit. And like I said, the first six drives, they had 74 total yards. Indiana did. Mm-hmm. In the last two drives, they had 145 yards. Like, you're right. It was, you could feel it too. I felt myself saying they need halftime bad. Because all of a sudden it was, Nebraska was leaking a little bit. And you're right. They bounced back from a really poor end to that first half.
Yeah. Yeah. When we started missing tackles, they were throwing like fades on us, like the back shoulder plays. And I mean, those are, you know, those are hard to stop, but like, we'd rather them, I mean, I guess we don't want them running the ball ever, but
right.
Like, you know, making people throw like harder outside, you know, go make a play throws. I think that's, we'd rather them do that
for sure
than, you know, pick us apart, obviously.
Yes.
So, I'm just happy we were able to like adjust, rally, like, switch it back, which that was a big step for them.
It is. I think I've asked you this before, and I think you gave me a comment like it was like the dumbest question I've ever asked, but you made me not feel too stupid about it. Like, one thing that I thought was interesting was, like, especially when you go back and look at the tackle distribution of the games prior to this, the leading tackler was, you had four different guys with five. Like, it was a lot of dudes making tackles.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a product of rotating guys in there. The question I asked you one time was about, like, can you tell anything from tackle distribution? Because sometimes you look and it's like one guy's, you know, there's been games where Reimer has 11 or 12 and the next closest is five. Like, this was very spread out in terms of who was making the plays here.
Yeah. But that might also just be Indiana's style, like where the ball's going.
Sure. Anything else with the defense?
No, I mean, I still think they're The defensive ends, those guys, I'm very like, I still feel like they have more to give. Like they're playing, they've been playing well, I think, for the most part. I just keep thinking they're going to start getting after the quarterback even more than they are.
Like, right. Nelson kind of sunk, you know, put his fingerprints on the game a little bit at times. But Mathis and Tanner have just,
they've done a good enough job of, like, I think they've, you know, been good in the run and they do what they're supposed to, but like they haven't disrupted, they haven't made any special plays, is what I would say. Like special rushes, special pressure on the quarterback stuff that I kind of expected a little bit more. We'll see if a little bit of confidence in a new scheme, giving those guys a couple weeks. Because if those guys start playing really well, this defense goes from,
yes,
like, you know, right now, like not good to average to like average to good, maybe.
Yes. And then I thought it was also good. Ty Robinson played well. Ty Robinson made a couple splash plays. Jason Peter Jr. was on the sidelines. You see him on the, they cut to him one time. Jason was just suppressing. Breathe, Jason. Breathe.
He wanted to get out there.
Oh, you better believe he wanted to get out there. But yeah, so I mean, anything else? Because I got a lot of people wanting us to talk about Bush. You know, I mean, it's just, that's an impressive,
good first game.
Yeah,
I mean, Bush has been around a long time. He's worked with, you know, he's worked under Urban Meyer. He's worked under a lot of good coaches, and he's seen a lot. So I think the good thing about Bush is he's got a lot of experience. You know, he's been a coordinator before, so. I think it's going to be interesting to see, like, all right, now a team's going to get to scout his.
Yes. Right, now so you've seen, cause he had the element of surprise coming. Knowing you can't change a ton, but you'd have to imagine Indiana was like, all right, new coordinator.
Are they going to run exactly? I mean, they're probably scouting what we did the last, and this is totally different. Right. So,
Did it look schematically totally different?
It looked different. Like it just felt like it was more man to man. Like we didn't run man to man very much before that. And I think it was just more man, and like we really dropped and forced him to, you know, throw a little check down type of, or like shallow underneath stuff. And we never forced that quite as much before. So, I mean, I thought their quarterback, who likes to sling it, looked like he was searching for guys all the time versus like he didn't really know what he wanted to do.
But you're right. It's a good point. Now there's a little tape. Now Rutgers can look at it and go, okay, now we know at least one game what Bill Bush wants to do, tendencies, whatever.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Now the chess match really starts. But man, you have to tip your cap to Bill Bush.
You got to. Bill Bush did a great job. He was a big part of that win and deserves credit.
And your boy, you said that Reimer needed to go to the pool and make a splash.
I knew I was going to say
that. I love that line. That tickled me pretty good.
He went to the pool.
Yeah. Nick, have you ever seen a play? That was an amazing play.
I actually believe he like left his... He left his guy
to come back.
To go make the play and then to catch that ball.
Because you know he's probably thinking, you've been there, like, I'm just trying to light this guy up and dislodge the ball.
Yeah.
And then
he had the presence to grab it.
Because it never hit the ground, because it definitely wasn't a fumble, right? Like, that was a bizarre sequence
there. But see, that's the thing about Reimer is he's one of the guys that is pool capable. He can go to the pool to make the splash. He's one of those guys. Like, not everybody can swim.
He can totally swim. I love it.
Or he can go off the diving board. Whatever you want to say.
However you want to put it.
Reimer can make splashes. Most of the guys on our team cannot.
Garrett Nelson can make a splash play.
Yes.
Reimer can make a splash play.
Yes.
And I feel like I'd be getting pretty generous with handing out splash play awards if I said anyone else really at this point has shown the capability. Isaac Gifford has shown... A little bit of,
he's to be determined if he's a splash guy or if he's just a lunch pail, get it done guy.
Right.
I mean, he played good. He made some nice tackles this week, but you know, JoJo was a splash guy. So JoJo in that role was splashing. We'll see. We'll see as the season goes, like who else? Cause we probably need like one or two more splash guys. So somebody,
just say someone's got to step up.
Somebody in the secondary has got to be. So is Hartzog going to be it? Buford had a couple picks, but he's also, I mean, he's right now, we're worried about other things with him besides that. So,
sure.
And Newsom does his job probably better than anybody else in the secondary, but he hasn't really been like a splash guy.
We got a lot of this in the secondary, what I love is when a guy will violently pass interfere
and then do this
and then hit him with
Can I go off on a quick tangent?
By the way, for the listeners, we're doing the finger wave. Yeah, there's a lot of no, finger wave. Okay.
So this is one of my new pet peeves. What you just said.
Yeah.
Guys will do this after every play, whether there's a flag coming or not.
Right.
A lot of times the flag is thrown. They'll make a tackle 10 yards downfield or after a first down, and they'll get up and flex about it, which I'm like, no. Nope. We're not doing that. And then I saw a guy last night catch a ball on maybe it was like second and 15 and got like 8 yards, did not get the first down and pointed.
I saw that too.
And yeah. I went, you got to get the first down.
Right.
And you don't have to do it every first down. Do it on the ones that matter. Like, I'll give an example. This was the year 2000. It was a freezing game. Oh, it was a big, I don't know, third and one, and somebody runs it, gets it, and gets up and gives a serious first down. His name was Nick Bob.
Yes. It was a snowy game against Papillion.
It was. It was a really cold game, but it was a huge play.
Right.
And you gave the first.
Yes.
And I think, I don't know if our coach liked it or not, but everybody else was like, well, it's Nick, that's great. But you could give it there. It was an emotional, it was real. You can't do this every time you get a first down,
right?
Especially if you don't get the first down.
I totally agree. It's pretty rare now you see anybody, it's rare you see a defensive back break up a pass and not react. And this isn't just to Nebraska. This is like everybody.
But they all copycat. It's a bunch of copycats. They all copycat the guy they all see. And so everybody does the same thing now. Every catch has to be this, and every tackle has to either be this
or this. No. Right.
Yeah. It just drives me nuts. Just like, you can't mean it if you do it every time.
I agree.
You can't.
Well, I just love when it's like, it is vicious pass interference, and you know you is pass interference, and you still like, nope, not on me. Like,
nope.
Really?
I
think you're pass interference.
He dropped it. He got open. I couldn't guard him, but he did not catch it. I mean, they don't cover good sometimes and go, nope, when the guy drops it. I'm like, you should be like, you should be pissed at yourself.
That's so good. No.
I couldn't cover him.
Oh, it's so good. Okay. Defense, check. The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors, and I want to talk to you guys about energy efficiency. And if you go onto Pella's website right now, you look at it, and how about this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different types of windows or doors by Pella won the Energy Star 2020 Most Energy Efficient Award. That's big time stuff right there. And they achieved that in a couple of waves. They got insulated glass, which slows the heat transfer, keeping your home at a more comfortable temperature. They got types of low E glass, which is a glass coating that has been optimized for your climate. They got triple pane glass, which you can upgrade to for increased insulating airspace. And within all of that, one of the keys is proper installation, which is key for window and doors to perform at their best. And you know the Pella experts are excellent at that. Bottom line, energy efficiency matters in making your home more comfortable, and Pella Windows and Doors are at the top of the line when it comes to energy efficiency. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. Offense. Lot to get into here.
Our first drives are good this year.
I mean, I feel like you could go Nebraska at the Los Angeles Rams, and it's like Whipple and the boys are marching on the first drive.
He lets it whip.
Oh, he whips that thing, boy. But that's what I wrote. Started strong, finished strong, really sputtered in the middle. Just sometimes it's nice to say it out loud. Here's the first half. Touchdown, punt, 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 touchdown, punt. Second half, punt, interception, punt, 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 touchdown, touchdown, punt.
Our offense's ability to look really good and then take two full quarters and do nothing.
Zero.
I don't really understand that.
This offense goes in the tank sometimes. But then
they're good enough when they're humming that I'm like, we got a good offense. But then, like, man, like, that game started to feel the same way. Like, well, now this is Oklahoma all over again. Like, we started fast and we just like fell in a rut.
Well, and the thing that drove me nuts as a man that has grown to love field position and punting, could Nebraska have had better field position for the entire third quarter? They started every single drive either right at midfield or on Indiana's side of the field and were either throwing interceptions or punting. Now, a lot of what happened were penalties just crushed them.
Yeah.
Because even what was unfortunate was they had looked great on the first drive. Second drive, they were marching down the field, got inside about the 30, and Alante Brown, I mean, he tackled. It wasn't holding. It was he full-fledged tackled his guy.
You don't need to do that even. You just need to, like, occupy him and let your fast guy, you know, run by, or at worst, you get 3 yards. You know, like, the only thing you can't do is take a 10-yard hold. You know,
yes.
You just can't do that.
Because then, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was a 10-yard hold, and then Casey got an intentional grounding, and all of a sudden you were humming. And then it was like, after that, the offense just went in the tank.
Yeah. Like, that's the part about penalties that matter so much, is that it's not just, hey, yardage, it's momentum and the feeling you have, the play calls you can run. When you're humming, you should not mess with that if you're on offense. You're better off not holding and not gaining a yard, but like keeping the momentum going versus going back and throwing away 90% of your playbook.
Yes, because it was the penalties were a lot of the culprit for what slowed this offense down. But nevertheless, it is pretty. They are a Jekyll and Hyde offense bad, where when it's rolling, it looks pretty darn good. But man, when they can't get it going, it is really, really concerning. And a lot of that goes back to the offensive line. This offensive line is still especially pass protection, gave up 4 sacks, gave up 8 tackles for loss. Still a major concern.
Yeah. I think that right tackle position, we're still, I mean, they pulled Ben Hart and they put in Brant Banks, his BB brother.
Yeah. They're like, give me another BB.
What other BB do we got here? Get him in. Let him try.
Yeah, because what's unfortunate.
But then what did Brock Bando do then? Was he out there? No, he wasn't out there.
No, he was not out there. But
he felt left out.
Okay. Let's just get into one of the big discussions was Casey Thompson getting benched. And that whole sequence.
Wrong time in the game. Like, wrong position on the field to do that. So, I don't know if they were taping his hand, so I don't know if he needed it or not. But to me, it sounded like it was like they wanted him to see, you know, come out, settle down, see the game. Not when you're inside your own 10. God, I just don't like it. I think that was a mistake.
Yes.
I think that was a very potentially critical mistake.
Yeah, it really swung the game.
You just don't, like, Chuba's had a couple of throws this year. So when he comes in, you basically, I don't think you're looking to throw it. They know that. And their mindset changes.
And let me
tell you, new guy comes in, they're going to heat him up. Where Casey, they might not heat him up as much.
Oh yeah. They knew when,
so you're asking for, to me, that's the mistake, is you're asking for it when you bring in the backup QB.
And as a quarterback, I've only thrown a handful of these. Standing in your own end zone is a horrible feeling.
Yes.
It's a you have a shower and you don't have a towel close and you got to do like that wet shower. You're just like, it's horrible. And I saw a camera, Kevin Suits of 1011 had a camera on Whipple and Casey Thompson. Whipple was pissed at Casey on taking that sack on 3rd and 2, whether it was he missed a guy, I'm not sure, or if he just, it did seem like he held onto the ball for a long time and needed to feel, because it wasn't even like he got blindsided. He needed to feel that guy coming on him.
Yeah.
But he was pissed at Casey, and you could tell gave him that, like, you know, sit down, you're dead. And then kind of got Chuba's attention. But I'm with you. Don't like that situation. I also, and maybe this is that quarterback in me, I have never been a fan of or subscribed to the school of thought that you hear from people at times of take a quarterback out, let them sit for a series, see it. I think that's a bunch of nonsense. I've never felt like that is something that is like a great thing.
I struggle with that, because I think there's a time and a place for it. But to me, it's like, is that also like, were they trying to give Chuba a chance? Or is that just like,
all I know is in the moment, it felt like Chuba.
It was early enough to me that it didn't feel like, man, this game has really gotten away from Casey. It felt like, because it felt like it was too early for the, like, bringing the next guy.
Because Casey hadn't played. Now, he had the great first series.
Yeah.
And he was, it was gorgeous. The touchdown pass to Oliver Martin was like, man, when Casey throws a pretty ball, it is like breathtakingly pretty.
Yeah.
But Casey had taken two sacks on back-to-back drives. And it's not like he'd played bad enough to get benched, but he hadn't played good enough to where you're not like, well, what is this?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think I'm okay with doing that. Not that I don't love taking people out. I think it's, especially the quarterback's like a rhythm thing, but like, okay, if the mindset is let's give this guy a chance to, relax, see the game differently, like Mickey said, fine. I don't want to do that inside my own 10 ever. That's my rule. Okay. If you start in the 25, you're starting the 35.
There's a lot of things. Yes. Totally agree.
Whatever, like, it's just such a different feel what you run and what you can run, the way they play you versus the way, like, when the defense has you inside your own 10, man, you just feel tight and they feel aggressive.
Right.
That's not when I want my quarterback who doesn't play to have his first couple of throws.
So I couldn't agree more. The situation was a bad situation for that. And then just me, this is a personal preference thing. Whipple and Mickey know more about football than I've ever dreamed of knowing. I think the quarterback position is unique. You want to say it's like, well, if a running back doesn't do his job, he's coming out and that's it. Like, it's different. With the quarterback is different.
It's a rhythm
thing. It's a rhythm thing. It's a confidence thing. It's the other guys on the field look to that position and it's greater than just, there's just a lot that goes into the quarterback position. I have just never been a fan of come out, take a seat, relax. Because the hard part about that is like, okay, what if Chuba goes and plays, he comes in, marches them 90 yards. Okay. Was that just a series to sit Casey and let him see it?
Well, then you got to start thinking about, you have to really consider, is Chuba hot then? And then you got a QB controversy.
And I'm just saying, all of a sudden, and again, I'm doing a lot of, I'm borrowing trouble and all that, but this is what I'm talking about. These are the situations you open up.
Yeah. And so I think you have to be very, and this is where, I don't know how prepared they are to have a QB controversy, but I'm the type, like, I don't want a QB,
I don't want it either. Yeah. So I just am not a fan of it. Now, all is well that ends well. Casey came in, finished the game. Casey seemed like he was fine. Everything was fine.
Yeah.
But that was a big sequence. It gave Indiana life. It got Nebraska. It lost all their mojo. I'm never a fan of the whole bring them in for a series and let the quarterback calm down.
If we lost that game, that decision would have been
the decision.
It would have been scrutinized big time.
Yes.
Because the game was going really well for us up to that
point. And so here's the hard part. I think it was, and not to give the guy too much credit because of obviously who he is and how we did here, but I love Mike Riley, and this probably isn't his line, but he always had a line, never look past something in victory that you wouldn't in defeat.
Yeah.
And I love that.
It's a great,
like, it. And if we're sitting here talking about Indiana winning the game, that decision would be scrutinized.
I didn't like it at all. And I got another one that we'll get to in a bit.
Well, and then side note, the other thing I don't like, real quick tangent, I hate the whole, you're not down when you're on top of a defender. Like, you have been, Chuba had been tackled. He is laying on top of the Indiana defender.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's down. It happened in the Auburn Oregon national title game.
Yeah.
I think it was Christian Dyer had a huge run for Auburn where he kind of got spun around, was on top of a defender, but wasn't, his body wasn't on the ground. I don't know how you would write that rule, but it's like, to me, Chuba was down.
It's hard. If they don't blow the whistle, it's just
a sad
thing. Yeah, I mean, Chuba, don't take a sack in the end zone.
I mean, right. Well, it's also, in his defense, Grant and Ben Hart effectively blocked zero. Two guys had, it was two on two. It wasn't like they were outnumbered. Yeah. It was two on two, and those two guys didn't touch the two guys.
And that's where, like, I don't know whose fault it is. I mean, it looked like they were both wrong because they both touched nobody. But, like, that's the same thing with the defense. Like, pass blocking, right? Pass protection. Like, define it. Like, you always got the outside guy, or I take the, you know, always the, if there's two coming, I'm taking inside and the back goes. Like, it's just got to be defined. You just got to know what it is and you got to do it. And you just can't give up uncontested
two
rushes
dudes
into the end zone.
Uncontested.
It's nuts.
So I felt bad. Chuba's now our new Gabe Irvin. Like, I want to defend Chuba. It's like, geez, what a brutal situation for Chuba to be put in.
Chuba hasn't earned my.
He's not earned the Gabe Irvin love.
Earned the Gabe Irvin love.
You know what's hard though, and as we move on to Anthony Grant, anything more with Casey Thompson?
No.
Okay. Or that sequence with Anthony Grant, he had 32 carries, 142 yards, and I'm not going to lie, even though our guy probably got he suffered because he didn't get as many carries, I'm a bell cow guy. I like that they didn't sub as much. I like that they gave Grant more carries. That doesn't mean I don't like Gabe Irvin.
Nick, 32 carries.
I like it.
That is the sign of a bell cow. That is a sign of not that Anthony Grant is like the end all. I'm just saying though, like, it says something that we're willing to give a guy 32 carries. You don't see that much anymore in modern football. Like, somebody's getting 30 carries. And I like it because it signals like we want to win this game.
Yes.
I've seen too much of saving people for the fictitious game in the future that never arrives. Like, sometimes you need to give 30 carries and you need to.
I agree. Yes. As opposed to if computer starts playing.
Some advertising. For a Dodge Ram.
I have found you a Speedo. Do you want me to purchase it? Like, no, I don't want that to happen.
Swedish made.
Swedish thong bikini for you, sir.
Oh, that's
one
for my wife.
Swedish penis enlarger. Like, it's not mine, baby.
For
it's
Austin
not mine.
Danger powers.
One book called Me and My Penis Enlarger. It's not mine, baby.
It is my bag. Swedish made penis enlargers are my bag. A book by Austin Power.
Oh, it's so good. That's what just happened. I wish I would have played something terrible. No, the other thing with Anthony Grant, though, that I like is there are times that dude will run tough.
Oh, he's tough. He's a tough kid. I mean, he fights for every. I think the Mickey might have said, like, he was missing the holes and blah, blah, blah. Like, and that's fine. That means that, like, this was a bad game for him and he had 32 carries for 130 yards, which is like, okay, a 4.3 average. Yeah, that's not like great for him, but like, he controlled the game in a lot of ways. Like, we could give him the ball and he would make, you know, five when there wasn't much there, or he'd get that extra couple yards and get the first. He was the guy we could depend on to just be like, we're going to win this game by handing you the ball all fourth quarter.
I think he is, without question, the best running back since Amir. Now, he ain't Amir.
He's better than Ozigbo.
But he is better than Divine Ozigbo. He's better than any of the other guys that you can list that's been thrown in there. He's good enough.
He's good enough.
He's. I'm not saying he's great running back, but he's good enough.
Yeah, for sure.
You know who else is really good? It's Trey Palmer. That's another guy that you go, best receiver since. You go, is he better than Stanley? Is he? He's different than Stanley.
I mean, we haven't had a guy that can run like him. I mean, he's the only guy that I can remember, maybe ever, that can run the deep post and
outrun. I mean, he's running past Oklahoma.
Nick, he's like big time speed. Like, they say when he's even, he's leaving.
That's that.
Yeah, Trey Palmer.
I like that.
He's leaving.
Well, I love even Mickey after the game. He said, we're saying we're throwing it to Trey. Just hit your back foot, throw it as high and as far as you can, and he'll go get it.
Nick, there's not many guys like that.
I mean, 8 catches, 157 yards, 1 touchdown, and he's got the dangly earrings.
You know what I say about that?
Sweat, like your
you
confidence.
Got so much confidence. If you got to dangle, because I think like Deion LT, like those are the guys that did dangle earrings.
Right.
Like, you are so stupid confident.
You cannot.
You're wearing this.
You cannot wear dangle earrings and suck.
No, you can't suck, but you are also just, it's like inherent. Like if you've reached a level of confidence in your life, you're like, I better wear the dangle earring.
I'm going to let him dangle.
I'm going to let it dangle. I don't know what it
is. He's a dangle guy.
It's like, maybe it's like Johnny Depp, like you get so rich and famous. You're like, I'm going to be a pirate. I'm going to be a pirate today. I'm going to wear a headscarf and just be like,
I'm going to wear 10 rings.
I'm going to wear lots of rings.
Multiple scarves.
Yeah.
Because like, I am Johnny Depp. I think Trey Palmer's just like dangle. Like, I'm Trey Palmer.
I think here's the problem is when you're slow, like when you're slow, you're just like, I can't wear the dangle.
No,
but like when you're that fast, you're like, well, I'm the fastest guy in the field. And I think I want a dangle earring. Yes. I don't know why it works together. It just does.
He's a good player, man. You know, else our boy Oliver Martin kind of played well. Came back from Chimney Rock a year ago.
We just got a milk carton in a day. His face was off the milk carton. Found.
Good news out of Lincoln today. Oliver Martin has been found and accounted for.
Hooray!
He was at Chimney Rock, got lost. He's back now. But Oliver Martin was pretty dang good.
Yep.
Good to have Volkolek fully back and doing his thing. But Trey, man, like Nebraska, they're best wide receiver, best running back, like those guys are good enough to go on the field. And
let's not waste them. Let's not waste their, because I don't know. I mean, because does Trey have 2 years to go?
I thought he did.
Anthony's got two. I think they both got 2 years to go. So, like, I think we need to give these dudes the rock, which we're doing, which I like. But we need to play well enough around them, win some games. So, like, one, they'll, like, stay here. And two, like, I don't know. Like, we got some – they're unique talents. Like, one's, like, really good running back. And the other is, like, a really
Haven't had a player special fast,
like a speed receiver that just takes the top off the defense every game.
Haven't had a player like that.
No, we haven't seen that speed before.
He is, man, because the 71-yard touchdown was fantastic, and he caught a tough one. He's caught some tough ones where he's going to get hit, and he's.
I don't know that he's like a great like possession receiver, but he's like Nick. I mean, let somebody else. Help, you know, help in that role, but like once or twice a game, you can throw it deep and you have a chance at scoring every time. Like,
right.
It's hard to defend, and their defense now always has to go, well, we better send somebody deep middle because that guy's on the field.
Right.
If you don't, it's
a risk. Had a great all 22 cam replay of Palmer's touchdown, and they basically just got the middle of the field open and let Trey just run free.
And we do it once or twice a game, and we should do it every game because then they have to honor it.
Yes. The other thing with the offense too is for a team that has lost a ton of close games and really, let's be honest, the offense hadn't played well for a lot of the game. They scored two of their last three drives, 14-0 in the fourth quarter. Like they closed out the game, which is there's a lot of confidence that could probably get drawn from that. And it's just so weird how like all of a sudden at the end of games, like Nebraska can kind of just hand it to Grant and like he can kind of chunk them down the field when they haven't been able to do that for a lot of the game.
Well, I think that's also we held
the ball, time possession, man.
This happens to our defense. It's a time. It is. It's like the longer the defense is on the field, the more tired they get, the more mistakes they make, you have a better chance to do what you want. I think that's just how it works. And so,
Because here I said, so time of possession, Nebraska was plus 10 time of possession against Indiana. Against Northwestern, they were minus 9 minutes. Against North Dakota, they were minus 13 minutes. Against Georgia Southern, they were plus 3 and Oklahoma plus 1. But so plus 10 makes a difference. That allows you. You know, the 2 yard run turns into a 4 yard run in the fourth quarter, and that's the difference in maybe closing out the game.
Yeah.
So all in all, it's like I love Palmer, I love Grant. I think Casey's good.
Casey good can enough. Win you games.
You know, his interception was more of a, it wasn't a great throw. I'm not sure. It almost looked like they weren't on the same page on the route, but it was a really good play by the Indiana defensive back. And it was unfortunate because it was right after Reimer makes the pick. the next play, Casey throws the interception, right back to him.
Ill-timed.
But yeah, there's just something, they got to figure out how to be a little more consistent where, yeah, man, when this offense sputters, they are.
Yeah, they just can't. I like us when we're running the ball. I like when we like define our runs. I like when we pull, like when we do, when we just mush it, when we do the mush zone. I'm just like, have we ever done that well? I don't know. I don't want to tell people what plays to run. I don't think that they know what they're doing. But to me, if you were to ask me, I would love somebody to track. Okay, track me the plays they've like down blocked and pulled or done things where like they get movement with their line and the success we get versus straight zones.
Up. Right.
Like what's our success rate on each?
I would couldn't love to agree see more.
It,
I know.
What I'm seeing is like every time we pull or do something kind of dynamic, good things happen.
Right.
When we try to mush zone, I'm just like, I don't know.
Totally agree. When our boy Chancellor Brewington comes in and he comes on.
He did get a reception.
Too close to the sideline.
It was a little far back. I like the goal line. Call me next time when you buy the goal line.
That was unfortunate. Dude had to tiptoe the sideline for a 2-yard gain.
I get so pumped every time.
I love Chancellor Brewington. I
mean, he has t-shirts available. We found
out. I know. Too. Should we buy some?
We should wear them on the show.
For sure. I'm all about that. I'm definitely all about that.
Chancellor Brewington.
Here's the problem. It's the amount of people they tweet at Chancellor Brewington like, dude, this podcast loves you. And I don't think we appreciate. It's hard because it's like, we're pseudo making fun of his name, but we love, like, nobody embraces his role. Like, dude is just a stud.
We appreciate the little things in the life, and he's one of those things.
Like, I love that guy.
He said, I'm going to be a goal line.
The goal line Grim Reaper is what I called him.
Crackback guy.
Even on Casey's touchdown, he pancaked a guy.
Yeah.
Fucking great. Okay, you know what wasn't great? The penalties. 12 penalties, 111 yards, had to have been a record for most intentional groundings. Indiana also had 11 penalties. If you had to guess what the deal was, I would probably say, my guess is Mickey Joseph had probably spent 2 weeks, maybe even three, preaching aggressiveness, flying around, and getting that effort up. And sometimes that can lead to recklessness and mistakes, but I bet Mickey probably felt like I got to get the effort and the physicality ramped up and then we'll maybe dial it back. Plus there were maybe more new guys on the field. I don't know. Or maybe it's just don't fucking hold or don't get a penalty.
I mean, Nick, like they called a lot of holds, like our offense and our offensive line, tight ends, receivers. Okay. Alante Brown's hold.
Borkature.
I'm like, that's
yeah.
I've been held worse than that, and so many times in my life, and it never gets called. Like the one they called on Ben Hart was but you know, like a lot of those are 50-50 calls, right? The ones that we got on our defensive backs, like they were uncatchable balls. They were like, I don't love a lot of those calls. I think there was a lot of touchy fouls. They called one on Indiana's guy for offensive where I was like, I didn't think that was not. So I think those refs were just like throwing rags. I mean,
it's like, amazing that at some point you would think that they would have collectively been like, hey, we gotta like,
it should just either be like this thumbs up, thumbs down. Like this game is like, we're not calling anything.
Cause I liken it to, you know, when you play, everybody's in basketball has played that team that is super handsy, super aggressive. And then the whole line is like, well, they can't call every foul.
Yeah.
And there gets to a point where it's like, if you do that, you're going to blow a whistle on every single play. And no ref ends up doing that. But somehow that was the equivalent of last night. They decided they were going to throw a flag on. I mean, again, there are 23 penalties. So the game lacked a lot of rhythm and flow to it as well.
That's what makes this. It's actually hard. That's probably the reason why this game is, I'm like,
it's a bizarre game.
I'm being very reserved on how I feel about our offense and defense going forward, because like, I just don't It's hard for me to judge that game because all the penalties. I mean, the Corcoran gets two of them that were not, I don't think either were penalties. And he got two personal fouls and an ejection. Like, how does that happen unless it's egregious? How do you get ejected unless it's egregious?
Well,
it wasn't a targeting. It was like,
isn't two personal fouls an automatic ejection?
I don't think necessarily. I don't know that.
Maybe it's the punch that.
Yeah, but you got to see it and know that that's legitimately.
Because that was. What did you think? I mean, it was. It certainly wasn't. I mean, it was an open hand. I mean,
but he was like whipping around, like in the heat of battle, like whipping around, blocking a guy. He didn't slug a dude after the play. Like, to me, an ejection is like I slugged the guy after the play,
right?
Because I wanted to punch him in his face.
Right.
That's how you get booted. Not I'm blocking a guy and my hand grazed his face. Like that shouldn't even have been a penalty.
Yeah, it wasn't egregious at all.
Let alone an ejection. That was not a penalty.
Well, in the first one,
in my mind,
the first one, it didn't even look. First of all, the guy kind of flopped.
I think Trey Palmer.
And then it was Trey. Too. I thought it was two things. I thought the guy flopped, and I thought it was Trey Palmer that shoved the guy.
It looked like Corcoran came over because Thompson gets hit
and he gets face masked
and he's stumbling.
He got Aaron Crouch.
And so your linemen are taught like go protect your quarterback. So he runs over and kind of like is just like not even like that aggressive.
He missed Belding it. He was like, hey, what is going on here?
Come on, Preppy. I like Kelly. All right. But it's like usually like linemen come up and like clean the pile and like drill somebody. He didn't do that. He like was like they were kind of just like scrumming to get up a little bit. And then Trey Palmer comes over. Looked like Trey almost.
Trey was the one to me that really put his hands on the Indiana guy.
I know. And then that's what I'm saying. You
it was. It's pretty amazing.
That's our best lineman.
Yes.
He's our best lineman that got ejected for two pretty much phantom calls. Like those referees should basically be put on like probation. Like your job as a referee is like just call the game. Don't be the reason somebody wins or loses. And especially don't take out somebody's best player on two missed. Like you can't do it once. Shouldn't do it once. You definitely can't happen twice.
Right.
Happen twice in the same two plays.
Right. It was in the same series.
Two plays in a row.
Yeah. Two back-to-back plays.
So to me, like, you know, it's like, that's your job as a ref. There's no like, oh, we had a bad game. It should be like, if that's what you do, you should be borderline not allowed to ref. I mean, you shouldn't lose your job, but you should be like, you're now one of the people on notice of like, we don't know that you know what you're doing.
Yeah, I just don't think, I wish I would have seen the replay was fairly, there wasn't ever a great angle at it. And it just, man, we've all seen when someone punches someone on a football field. And that was...
Nick, it's obvious and it's egregious. And when it's not, it should never be called. It's football. Like,
right.
And so like, maybe I'm being a little extreme, but like, I think there's gotta be a process of maybe they have this, maybe they do have, cause Mickey said, we're going to send it in.
Yes.
But like they need to have a tougher process. Cause like that game was borderline.
That game was borderline. If I wouldn't have been a Nebraska fan and cared about the game, I can't imagine any casual fan would have wanted to continue to watch that game.
No, because they ruined it.
It was an unwatchable game.
Yeah. The game's better if like, oh yeah, more people hold and there's bigger holes. But like, as long as you let it go both ways.
I've always, and I don't know if it applies for football. I've always been one of those guys. Like I'd rather let people play than call it too tight.
Always. Always.
And that was insane.
Yeah. I mean, there is like, okay, there's times where it's like, you know, we're going back to basketball, but like, yeah, the team is just, they fouled. Like, so maybe like in the first half, you're calling a little bit tighter and there's more fouls and you know what happens? Well, that guy's got three fouls. He's got to go sit.
Like
those things are okay. But as long as it's called equally across both sides, it's fine. It's just though, like
the other thing
we were calling ones that like it's football, like, can't call ones that didn't really happen. Like the ones that don't happen versus like not calling enough is so much better than not calls.
With Turner Corcoran getting ejected, one thing I was thinking about as that game was finished was in the offseason, Corcoran, Teddy Peñuelas down, and Nerlens Noel were going to be three starters.
Yeah.
So they close that game out without three starters on a line that already lacks depth, that isn't very good.
I know.
So it's pretty, if you're looking for like a bright side of it, like the fact that they were able to close the game out the way they did without Corcoran. Yeah. And then obviously without those other two guys, because Noel is out for the season. But yeah, the penalties were brutal.
Yeah.
Real quick, special teams. Block punt, return for a touchdown. Kolarvik got it. Hartsog scoops and scores. Dominated field position for most of the game. Bushini was pretty darn good for most of the game. I wanted to ask you, were you a little surprised that they didn't, when Indiana was penned at their own 1 yard line punting,
why safe?
Why not go after it?
I think that is, this is where I would have liked to see him go after it.
It's like they've already blocked one.
This is the moment where special teams coordinators see it the opposite. They see they're going to be,
you got to worry about protection.
Yeah. You can hold up easier and get, so
I get it. I just,
that's a special team coach. I also think that they didn't want to, like, it's also not a bad decision in the sense of, you're going to have great field position. Don't do something stupid like rough them.
Yeah.
Rough them, right? But
I just figured because they'd already blocked one in the situation, like, and just, I thought, here we go. This is going to be, they're coming after this.
Yeah, thing. I think because we already blocked one, I kind of had my, you know, when dogs start foaming, I was kind of foaming.
Oh, I thought that's what was going to happen. Well, the other thing, too, what did you think of Trey Palmer returning punts?
I think he's too slow. He's gotta go.
Yes,
he's trying to, like, you know, he's taking 3 seconds to make his first cut, where it's like, dude,
get up the field
and go get 10 or 15 yards in those 3 seconds.
Right. I mean, because I thought the other thing that was unfortunate about that was, like, you didn't go after it, and then Trey Palmer caught the ball and seemingly went nowhere.
Go get 10 yards. Go get 15, man.
And I get it. Punt returning, there's an art to it. You're setting guys up. You're cutting back. But, like, there's a fine line between being patient and being too patient. And I thought all of his returns last night, he was being way too patient.
I think he doesn't look like a natural punt returner to me. You know what I mean? No. Like the great ones, they have a certain rhythm.
There's right.
A rhythm to them, like catch, bounce, break. He seems like his rhythm is not that. I think he's faster than
Yes.
But I don't think he knows how to get to that, like the great punt return.
Totally agree.
There's a
I was a little disappointed though, because he had a lot of opportunities to have some decent returns and wasn't great.
It's an art form. Like, returning punts is its own art form. I think Trey Palmer's something else, and he's trying to, like, he paints landscapes normally, and this is like, this is abstract.
That's a good way to put it though. It's a different, like, punt return. I've always said point guards and punt returners are born, not bred. You're either comfortable back there returning a kick and the moves as people are coming at you are just different.
Yeah.
Versus, and same thing with a point guard. You're either comfortable entering offense. You got the mind for it. You got the feel for it. All those kinds of things, because not all good passers are good point guards.
Yeah.
And not all fast guys and good runners are good punt returners. So yeah. I was a little disappointed in him.
He's a guy he's good enough. Like, he could take one to the house this year.
Yes.
Like, he has that ability, but he's never going to be DeJuan Gross.
No.
That's it. He's faster than DeJuan Gross, but DeJuan Gross is a better punt returner.
By the way, and I don't know, it's, you see it and you kind of go, oh, wow. I don't know if that's really that amazing though, because I don't know how much it actually happens, but that was the first blocked punt return for a touchdown since 2009 against Baylor. So it had been a while.
Yeah.
And Kolarvik got a hand on it. Like you said, Hartsog scooped it. A lot of guys would have just butterfingered that thing and messed it up. The Nick Bob Podcast is powered by Runza. You know, there are a lot of ways to greet someone. Hey, hi, hello, what's up? Another way is, what's popping? Well, here's the thing. That greeting has taken on a new meaning now, because the answer to what's popping is now Runza's new popcorn chicken. That's what's popping. Runza's new popcorn chicken is amazing. Little, bite-sized, delicious, all-white meat chicken that make any day better immediately. I love them. My wife loves them. My kids cannot get enough. 2-year-old Mac, 6-year-old Mava are constantly wanting to get it popping. Great for a snack, great for a meal. Pair them with the best crinkle fries on planet Earth, and you are set. All I got to say is you need to get out to a Runza location nearest you and get it popping. What's so hard to understand about that? Get it popping with Runza's all-new popcorn chicken. Runza makes it all better. Okay, two more things. We're out of here. We almost need to get our... can you get your headphones on for me? Because what happened with Mickey Joseph in the locker room, I think there's a lot to react to, okay? So Mickey Joseph, after the game, and I'm sure by now people have probably heard this and seen this, but I think it's something we gotta get into anyways. Trev Alberts comes down to the locker room. And this is what it sounded like inside the locker room. So if we can get this up here, let me pull it up.
First of all, I want to tell you guys how proud I am of you. I'm so proud of you. Thank you for how hard you've worked. You've gone through a lot, all this adversity. And I can't begin to tell you how proud I am of you. Thank you for representing us so well. But tonight is about another guy. His first win. Yeah.
So there you go.
Quite
a scene.
I also saw, I think it was maybe probably a little bit right after that, they had another one where they're just chanting
Mickey.
Mickey.
Yes.
Mickey, you know, it's
because they were kind of doing it at the end after the roar.
Yeah.
If they would have kept the camera running, they started chanting Mickey. So we take the headphones off. But quite a scene for Trev Alberts to come down to the locker room, give Mickey Joseph the game ball. I think it speaks to how Trev views Mickey and the respect he has for him.
Yeah.
And then for the players to react the way they did speaks volumes to how they feel about him. Clearly the players love him.
Yeah.
That the one thing that scene, and again, we're all riding the wave a little bit. That scene made me go, we maybe need to take Mickey Joseph even more serious as potentially being the guy than a lot of us are already doing. So
I don't know what happened after the Oklahoma game, but it felt like the narrative was like Mickey Joseph is out of the coaching search almost. I don't know if it was totally like that, but if you were reading between the lines, they were talking about a handful of other coaches way more definitively than the whole Mickey story. Like something happened after the Oklahoma game where it's like, maybe that was just like wishful thinking.
Yes.
But Trev Alberts came down and enthusiastically,
yes,
got in the circle and gave out a game ball. Now, Dr. Tom, I don't think, but this is also like, I mean, Trev knows Mickey. Trev was a big part of Mickey coming back here. Becoming associate head coach, assistant head coach. He's the guy he tapped. He built this contract as, which I think, did you send me the contract?
The contract, there's the line in there that he has a 3-year deal. And
whether he's head coach,
whatever,
or not.
Is not, he goes back to his position. But the way that people understand that, the way people had explained that, like Mitch Sherman explained it, is this doesn't mean that. Let's say Lance Leipold would come here. This doesn't mean that he has to keep Mickey.
Oh, see, I thought it was more like they're pretty much trying to. I mean,
I think they're going to try to do that. My guess is Trev or whoever. Let's say they hire Lance Leipold. Yeah. My guess is Trev's going to say, "Listen, Lance, this is your decision, but I will say, I think it would be a good idea for you to retain Mickey Joseph, and here's why." Blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
But I guess for me, one of the things I really underestimated the hold and the connection that Mickey has with the fans. Like he has a much bigger grasp on the hearts and the souls and the minds of Husker fans than I anticipated him having when this thing got started.
Yeah, it's funny because he's kind of from a lost I wouldn't call it a lost era.
No, it's, but it's the era that doesn't get discussed over. A ton.
So this is funny because I didn't think about Mickey Joseph because I don't really remember him playing. You know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
I don't, yeah.
There's a difference,
like obviously I knew who Mickey Joseph was as a player. I can't speak to
remembering
Mickey playing.
So I have in my old bedroom, I've got a signed photo from Mickey. So at some point when I was 6 or 7, I don't know if I went to a fan day or right. something, but Mickey signed. I have a Mickey Joseph signed picture. And so like he's there, but it's also then 93, 94, 95, 96, 97. Like that happened and you kind of went Tommy Frazier, Scott Frost.
Yes. And he Mickey got lost in the shuffle.
Lost in that shuffle. But I also have a signed Mickey Joseph. So Mickey's like a name. He was beloved when he was here, has all the credibility, coached Omaha North, loves Nebraska. Like yes. he has that got sort of lost though. So it's weird. Like he's this figure now that like, it's all kind of like, it's weird because it's not obvious.
Right. He's not obvious. Frost that won a title and sent Tom Osborne into retirement on top. And
he's not T. Frazier.
And he's not T. Frazier. Hell, he's not even Eric Crouch. You want a Heisman and all that. Like, but he's not, you know, Johnny Incomplete Pass.
No, he's the guy that right before the championship run, and then he went away coaching for he coached Omaha North, but then he went away for a long time.
And he went into coaching obscurity.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like he went into coaching and you turned on the Saturday CBS ACC game and Mickey was on the sidelines right away. He took the long route that got out of the minds of Husker fans. But I guess that's what's been interesting is how quickly he's got a real hold on people. And I think I think more people than you think are now Husker fans are a part of Nebraskans is they're loyal and supportive. And when you're the head coach, lots of people are like, damn it, I don't care who it is. I'm going to support and root for that guy. But there are a lot of people that I think would love nothing more, not only because it means Nebraska wins and makes this season interesting, but I think there's a lot of people that want to see Mickey get the job.
Here's why Mickey is so appealing though, because I mean, like you said, he went to obscurity, but then he ended up in LSU. So people have been kind of following him since he got to LSU. Yes. It's like, oh, Mickey Joseph's LSU? Like people went the light bulb went on oh my God. Like I didn't know he was such a good coach. I didn't know he was such a good recruiter. Yeah. So then all that starts happening. We get him back. We see the way he recruits and connects with kids, right?
Yes.
We see what he does. But on top of that, just like Frost, he understands what it means to play at Nebraska.
Right.
He did it. He understands what the fan base and what this thing's all about, which was that was the number one thing we said after Callahan and after Riley is if you don't understand us, it doesn't work. That was the big you got. And so Frost became savior because of that. He understands
right.
He's one of us
right.
And he's a winner. Look what he'll do here. We finally found it. Didn't work out. But Mickey actually checks the exact same boxes. He knows what it's about here. He played here and he's the guy that can help fix it that way. Like it's the same thing. It's just from a totally unobvious place.
And there's a simplistic authenticity to him that resonates with people. Like he is never trying to, you never sense that he's trying to be anything else other than who he is. Like even I love his halftime interview was hilarious. They're like, well, what's going on? It's like, well, we're playing stupid. We have too many penalties. How are you going to correct that? Well, I'm going to go talk to him right now.
Yeah.
It's like, it's great. It was great. Yeah,
he's
very matter of fact.
Matter of fact, and he's really not interested in selling a story as much as he's just lays it out as it is.
Because as much as I've said, I don't mind PJ Fleck and I think he's a really good coach. There is an element of PJ is trying to there is that showmanship to him.
Yeah. It's a, they call him a sloganeer or they call him
Mickey's not that.
Yeah. He definitely is. what's the word? I think he's pretty genuine. He's pretty genuine with the way he just talks about things. He talks like you could tell he's almost like he's never been a big time head coach, because he hasn't. He's not doing all the like.
No, he doesn't sound. What's weird is he doesn't sound like a head coach.
No,
but that's not.
It's not a bad thing. It's like,
that's okay, as long as you don't sound like you're not in control. He sounds like he's in control, but
he doesn't have the like the.
You know what he sounds like more of is like an NFL head coach, where it's just very like, you know, he'll answer the question. He'll kind of won't give you anything. Like, well, we got to get better at that. Yeah, hey, how do you? What do you got to do? Yeah, like, we need to.
It's not really like canned answers, though. He's like actually like somewhat being genuine.
Yes, it's weird. He's got a very. He's got an undefinable. It's a really unique way of the way he answers questions and speaks.
Yeah, because he's not being.
He's not being mean or short or cliche filled, but he's also not giving into like, you know, I always say that football's a lot like. And life in that you get, you know, like there's none of that with
he's
him.
Not preaching, he's just sort of like just being himself. It's to be determined, because this is new for him,
right?
Like, do you have to develop sort of that callus of like, I can't give him anything, I'm gonna talk in sound bites and just be done with it, or I'm gonna start sloganeering? Like, maybe that happens over time. Maybe over time with enough reps you have to do that. But right now, he's at least his projection to the world is very much kind of its own thing right now.
Can I had a whole topic I wanted to save for our wine pod, but we're kind of going there. Can I throw something at you?
There are no rules.
Okay. You know what? And this is really borrowing trouble. You know what would be potentially not a great scenario? Is if Mickey does, and this season goes good, but not quite good enough for him to be named the full-time head coach.
Yeah.
And he gets retained. It reminds me to a time when you were at Nebraska. Imagine if Bill Callahan would have kept Bo Pelini. Now, on the surface, it would have been great, because you're keeping a great coach and you're keeping someone that the players have a great connection with. But you never want to have a situation where there's any sort of waffling on who's the head guy, and that everybody is totally behind that guy being the head guy. Because what you wouldn't want to have happen is, it's got to be awkward if you're gunning for the job, you don't get it, and you're now retained as an assistant coach. Mickey seems like a guy, if there's anybody that's built to lose out on not getting it and would still go do his job and wouldn't have any problem doing it. But nevertheless, what you don't want to have happen is Nebraska hires Dave Aranda. Dave Aranda keeps Mickey Joseph, and some of the locker room's like, man, that should have been Mickey, man. We need to, man, Mickey should have been, this should have been Mickey, man.
I think it becomes a problem if the guy you hire isn't good.
He better be a pretty dynamic. Because one thing Mickey is I get this, that Mickey knows how to. Some coaches know how to just coach you. Some coaches know how to reach you.
Yeah,
Mickey knows how to reach you.
Yes,
and have your heart. And so whoever this next coach is, better have a charisma to him. I'm just now, we're borrowing trouble. And maybe let me make this abundantly clear. Like, I would love nothing more than I'm rooting for Mickey. I hope when next year's seasons kick off that Mickey Joseph is still in Lincoln, Nebraska, regardless of role. I think it is in the best interest of whoever is hired to probably keep Mickey on. But I'm also saying, let's not be naive to some of the things that we're talking about here.
This is what's hard, because you said that, and it's one of the, you know, questions that will never be answered, is like, Callahan keeps Pelini, who at the time was like the best defensive coordinator in football. I mean, his 03 season was like a revelation for the people that were there.
Right.
The guys that were, I mean, it was like
the way you and your brother talk about him is like
that season was in its own way one of the most impactful seasons of my life. It was just so, it just felt like everything was hitting in the right cylinder,
right?
Which is hard to describe, but it felt like we were playing a different game than other teams. It felt like we were like, we're advanced. Like he came from the NFL and we were running like Pete Carroll's system,
right?
Like to a T. It just felt like we were doing something special. Now, pair that with Callahan's offense. I don't know. I think there would have been a chance that
it
could have been really well. I also do think with Pelini's personality that it would have, it could have turned into like, you remember when like the, this would have been not such a bad thing, but the Bears in the '80s with Buddy Ryan, Mike Ditka, it was like offense versus defense. Not like, not friendly, like hostile almost, right? Like it could have maybe went down one of those roads. But I also think it could have went a lot better for Callahan if he would have had Pelini in his staff.
Oh, I feel like you're misconstruing. Like, I think it would have been, I think the hard part is it's not an apples to apples conversation because like Pelini was a defensive coordinator and was elite at it. Like,
and but he had never coached it. What Mickey is doing now is like,
he's getting a season. He's getting a full season.
He got a Big Ten season audition. So for him, it's like, it's either he's going to me though, I think it will be clear. I think he'll either win a lot or will win one or two. In some ways,
I wonder, like Trev would never say that, like it would help Trev out if it was obvious.
If it's 4-4,
at 5 wins, if they go 5-7 and he wins four of these last eight games.
If he goes 4-4 in the Big Ten, what do you do?
Now, it maybe depends on what else is out there, you know, like who else you could get, all those kinds of things, what the 4-4 looks like, all those kinds of things. I'm simply saying, as I was kind of thinking about this, like it could create, there could be a weird dynamic created because when I'm watching those players jump up and down, chant Mickey, like.
I also think they are just, Nick.
They're probably so happy to win too.
Right. So I think there's nothing wrong with what Trev did. To me, he's excited. He doesn't need to play like cold guy up here. I can't be happy for Mickey. And even if like in the end, he's not the guy, he doesn't have to show his cards now or not show his cards. I think it's fine to do what he did. I do think with Mickey, the gray spot is if he does better than average,
but not great.
But yeah. So now we really want to go down a path here. If it's an average, but we don't find
there isn't a home run guy, what do you do?
Then is it a safer play to like give Mickey a chance to do it, even if it's like, Mickey, we're going to give you another year or two?
That's right. I don't know.
You know what I'm saying? Because that's like,
because there is a chance at the end of the year where Mickey is the best option.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if we don't have, like, you name the Dave Aranda
Lance Leipold or whoever.
Urban Meyer, whoever it is, right? Whoever's, like, the guy you want. Let's say you want that guy and they just say, you know, I'm staying at Kansas. I'm staying at Baylor. I'm staying
wherever
in broadcast.
Yeah.
Then you don't have the guy you want, you know, or the obvious choice. And Mickey does better than average here. You know, then is it a better scenario to be like, let's just do a 2-year with Mickey. Like if the fans are happy, you know, like that stuff like matters. Like the fans are engaged with Mickey. That plays a big part.
The product on the field has to match that though. These last 7 games now still have to go. There still has to be a level of football and winning that has to take place.
Yes.
But I don't know. I just wrote all this stuff down, and I know this sounds like, you know, all media guy trying to. I'm not trying to drum. I'm just simply like,
Nick, these are scenarios.
You got to think about these scenarios now.
We won the Big Ten West is open. So as crazy as that would have sounded last week, the losses from other teams and us winning, and we look, you know, we got 3 very winnable games, and then November is going to be a tough month.
Yeah.
But like, if things get rolling into November. This conversation
becomes a real thing that you have to think about. And I just, it's interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but it's a fun conversation to think about because this win that just, we're talking about this Indiana win makes this conversation possible.
Yeah.
Because if we lost this game,
oh, this season, if we're turning on the mic today, and it's like this season's going nowhere, it's going down the drains. That's why I started the whole conversation with, like, for any roadmap to making this thing interesting, making this season have any hope, and Mickey having a chance at being the head coach, you had to win this game. Well, they did. Yep. And then you even couple it with the visual of Trev genuinely excited for Mickey, gives him the game ball. Trev is in there.
You don't fight,
jumping up and
you
down.
Don't fight the mosh pit jump. You right. go with it. If right. it starts happening, a rule in life, you go with
and
it.
And I like that Trev did that. Because, like, I remember initially, like, I remember we were sitting here watching that press conference when Trev fired Frost. And he was basically asked about Mickey being the interim and all that, and said, listen, I would love to see Mickey. Mickey's going to have a shot at this thing. And I'd love to see Mickey grow into being the head coach. And I remember at the time, I was like, I wonder if, you know, does he
that's
really
real?
That, like,
it's a real endorsement. Like,
to me, doing that, Trev is genuinely, sincerely considering Mickey Joseph as the next head coach.
I would argue that type of expression should be encouraging Mickey Joseph, like, in the sense of,
absolutely, like,
this guy is really giving me a chance.
Right.
Because this isn't window dressing. This is a guy that is. He is pumping me up now. He's pumping me up to this team and the fans, which is that support.
You, Bo, all this stuff. He knows the camera's in there.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to know, people got to give the thumbs up on the thumb. Hey, Trev, we taped that. Can we post it?
Oh,
yes. Yeah. No. And Trev, being in broadcasting and a part of being an athletic director, is understanding optics and narratives. It's almost like you're in public office, where you got to know everything you do, how it's going to land with your base, or when that being fan base. And you understand all of that. And so, and he did it. So to me, it's almost like, by handing that game ball, it is like, guys, Husker Nation, I am heavily considering this guy.
Yeah.
So just some things to chew on there.
I just saw that video,
that's why I wanted to send it to you.
I'm so glad you did. Cause I didn't, you know, if I'm not on Twitter, I didn't see it, but I think, so this makes Rutgers very interesting. So it goes, is it Rutgers?
Rutgers, Purdue, Illinois. And then it's
a real opportunity here.
Well, here's, okay.
That schedule is in his favor.
This is how I want to wrap this up. Kind of a broad takeaway. And it kind of builds off what we're talking about. I had to look this up, but it was Henry Ford. You're a history guy.
A Model T assembly line.
He will build an automobile to get us from point A to point B faster than any horse or any walk-in could do before us. No. Henry Ford had the quote of, if you think you can or think you can't, you're right. And I want you to think about this for a second. The story the players can tell themselves now, again, and all that matters is if you believe it. You being the players. The story they can tell themselves right now is, all right, we got a new head coach. We got a new defensive coordinator. We got a new defense. We've changed the way we practiced. We're tackling more. We finally had a bye week to get our legs underneath us emotionally and physically. And what happened? We just won a Big Ten game. And it was by far the best defense had played this year. And now you look at the Big Ten West standings and you go, oh shit, we're in a tie for first place. All I'm saying is the recipe for seeds of confidence can get planted there. And right or wrong, you can kind of explain away the first four games of the season if you're a player right now. And to quote another guy that we know, Andy Dufresne from Shawshank Redemption, wrote in the letter to Red, hope is a good thing, maybe the best of things. And I have to assume, for the first time since August 27th in Dublin, Ireland, for the first time, hope is probably permeating throughout that locker room. And I have to assume this is for the first time in a month, those guys are going to go to practice with a little bit of bounce in their step. You look at the Big Ten West standings, Nebraska, Minnesota, Iowa, Purdue, Illinois, Northwestern, all tied at 1-1. So I'm not saying or predicting that this team's going to go to Indianapolis, but confidence can get derived from a lot of different places. Confidence comes from preparation. Confidence comes results, but confidence can also come from the tale you tell yourself. And the one thing, Mickey, I think, and the one thing you got to tip your cap to Trev, the moves to fire Frost and to fire Chenander give an opportunity for the players to tell themselves a different tale.
That's it. And they just...
And now they finally had one result.
They got a win.
That works. So all of a sudden, the preparation's different. Preparation, confidence. The result is different. Results equal confidence. And the tale that they can tell themselves is different.
Yeah.
And that's another way to that's gain confidence.
Said. Wow, that's well said. You thought that out.
I thought day. That out.
That's pretty good.
But that's
I couldn't, Nick, just they've finally seen themselves win a Big Ten game. It's been since Northwestern last year.
Think about 360 some days since they beat an FBS team.
They just kept like, so this gives them an opportunity to get on a win streak, which we've never, like, we keep talking about, like we kept saying, can we get in a 3-game win streak and see what happens to our fans and to our team? We don't know what that's like. These guys, this is the first step. Like, you have to take baby steps. They took the baby step, but you said, right? Like, the sacrificing, rolling a couple heads, changing things up gives them the ability to be like, okay, well, now we get a fresh start, a new perspective, and here's the result. We're a new team. Right.
They can kind of tell them, as much as, again, as much as that may not be true, and as much as they still are the same team that gave up 642 yards to Georgia Southern and the same team,
the defense doesn't think that tomorrow.
The defense doesn't think that when they walk into practice tomorrow, that shit doesn't matter.
Hey, just line up, play your job. We're going to be fine. They'll start telling themselves that.
And the one thing that is always great about, one of the things I love about college basketball is the hope that March gives everybody, regardless of what had happened leading up to that. Yeah. You still have an opportunity to play your way into the big dance. And I think the same thing could be told right now for Nebraska. They can sit there and go, all right, we may have lost to Northwestern, but we just beat Indiana and Wisconsin's 0-2.
And you know what? Georgia, Southern, Oklahoma are non-cons. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't. At this point, you just got to go to Rutgers on Friday and win. And you got to go to Purdue and win. And you got to get a bye week. You got to rest up. And you got to host Illinois, who's playing great, and you got
to
win.
But they're Illinois. They're not Michigan. Like, right. Illinois was a team we would probably most want to play to start this year. So, yeah, Illinois just beat Wisconsin, so maybe I should reel that back in. But still, like, those three games are your three most winnable games, if we would have said at the start of the year. Like, those coming up games, which means, like, you could get the lead.
You could
be in the Big Ten West if you just play good football. And then you put the pressure on the other teams, on the Minnesotas, the Iowas, and the Wisconsins in November. Then it becomes, Nick, the pressure's on them for the first time in a decade.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just saying there's a path here. Again, I know, but I'm saying, like,
we just did it again.
Well, no, I'm saying, like, if I had to bet, either bet on this or bet against it, I would have bet against it happening.
Yeah, you got to bet.
But I'm just saying there is now a legitimate conversation. What a difference a week makes. There's now a legitimate conversation for Nebraska to be playing meaningful games in November.
It's really all that matters in the end is how you do in the Big Ten. That's really what being the Big Ten football is about, right? So we are even with every team in the league.
And I'm telling you, so just think about all those things you can tell if you're Mickey or your players right now.
Why go to work hard? Why prep? Why watch the extra film? Why do the extra drill?
Because guess what?
We're in it.
Guess who is first, tied for first in the Big Ten West? Nebraska. You know, you can say we are.
It does. It shakes up your whole way of looking. If you are out of it for the year, your coach, like, you're done. You're just not going to prepare. Kids, human nature says we're not going to work as hard.
That's what I'm saying. Once the chances of any sort of hope of anything interesting, with whether it be a bowl game, a Big Ten West race, whatever, gets removed, and the coaches are probably dead man's walking, man, it was going to get sad. And listen, that story can still become a reality. You go to Rutgers, get your teeth kicked in, you go to Purdue and lose, and then you go lose to Illinois. November gets dramatically less interesting. But the opposite is true. And again, if I had to bet on it, I'd bet against it. But I'm saying it's possible.
It's good. That's good.
It is possible. So what a difference, or what a difference a week makes. I can't believe in our wine pod, one of our first topics I threw at you is, do you care about these last eight games? And now listen to us. Not only because of the fact that they won, the fact that defense took steps forward, but then the rest of the West did.
I'm telling you, Minnesota getting beat
is huge.
Huge.
And Wisconsin losing.
Yeah,
Wisconsin's 0-2.
Yeah, Wisconsin was showing signs of
struggle.
Iowa, obviously, they couldn't score.
Right.
But now they got beat. So it's like, man, like, dude, you couldn't ask for a better week. You really couldn't.
Right. So it'll be, I mean, because, yeah, you look around the West, man, and it's like Illinois crushed Wisconsin. It's looked really good, but I don't think Illinois is great. Iowa offense still shaky. Purdue had a great road win, but, you know, I mean.
We'll see what Purdue is.
Minnesota dominated Michigan State, had dominated their opponents up to that point, but then looked very human against Purdue. And I'm not sure. I mean, Wisconsin, they lose to Washington State at home. They get crushed by Ohio State and they get crushed by Illinois at home. You go, what's going on there? And then I think we all admit that Northwestern, even though they beat Nebraska, Northwestern is not very good. I don't know, man. I don't know what I am.
But we're back in it.
We're back.
That's
baby.
All that matters.
That's
we're
it.
Back.
That is it. Anything else? Any parting shot or anything that you,
Nothing comes to mind, but I think if we think of anything, we'll be wine podding.
We'll wine pod it up. You guys can email any questions you got. If you guys want to throw us some questions, nick@nickbod.com. If you got some questions you want us to field this week when we're drinking some wine, we can do that.
Maybe if anybody's got any questions on the 90s, because I will be done with my Chuck Klosterman book that you have also read. And that's something I want to talk about in the wine pod. So questions about the 90. Anything 90s?
Not 90s Nebraska football, but 90s in general, other things.
90s,
right?
Whatever, world politics, pop culture, music, movies. We want it all because... Going to be some.
Was there ever like a mini book club type thing here?
Yeah, why not? If we ever read the same book, we're going to talk.
That's what I'm talking about. Okay, all right, my friend. We'll see you in a couple days for the wine pod.
Cheers.